Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. Hosting today is your boy, Nathan Heinschel. I am taking over for Colin, who is feeling a little under the weather. And joining me, as always, is Polly Questel. Polly, how are we doing?
I'm good. Winding down another day, and I can smell the potatoes boiling that I'm about to mash up already from my kitchen. So I'm getting hungry.
Ooh, we doing like mashed potatoes?
We're doing mashed potatoes tonight.
Excellent. What are we pairing with the mashed potatoes?
Salmon. That's how Icelandic people pronounce salmon. And some rice and maybe some broccoli. Depends how crazy I decide to get. Depends how long we're recording for, and depends how hungry I get.
Well, that all sounds a lot more appetizing than Manchester United's midfield options right now. So
that's a segue.
We will use that as a transition. See, you worked in radio. I worked in radio adjacent. This is nice. So since we last talked, Manchester United played Everton. It's a game that I admitted to you before we started recording. I completely forgot the events of until I had to look it up on Google.
In your defense, although this might not be your defense, but you were not awake for most of the game.
It's true. I was not. Unless Colin requests of me to run the social media for the Manchester United Busby Babe Twitter account, I have a policy of not setting my alarm for the 7 o'clock games. If I wake up, I wake up. If I don't, I don't. There's been too many, nil. Well, there's too many nil-nil Manchester United Liverpool games I remember from grad school that it's not worth waking up at 7 o'clock for. It's my East Coast bias. Feel really bad for our West Coast people who got up at like 4 a.m. to watch Manchester United draw Everton 1-1. So let's kind of go through the first half, the half that I was asleep for, and I kind of caught on the highlights. Anthony Martial scored. That was cool.
Yeah, I take credit for that because I tweeted that Anthony Martial wasn't playing poorly, but that United should sub him off at halftime so that they could get to 11 men. And like within a minute later, Martial scored. So I was obviously dunked on quite a bit. And I was like, maybe. And people were being like, he hasn't been playing poorly. It's like he's been quite good, et cetera, et cetera. And again, this is one of those situations of like not bad does not equal good, because Martial was not playing bad, but he was not playing well. And like when I rewatched the match and when you look at the numbers and you're just like, the left side in that first half was where attacks went to die. Is they failed to get Luke Shaw involved in the game. Is that a Martial thing? Maybe, maybe not. But Martial got the ball quite a lot, got it in transition quite a lot, with a chance to run at defenders quite a lot. Didn't create anything from it. It was nice to see him get into the box to get on the end of a couple of crosses. He had one from Wan-Bissaka about 5 minutes into the match that he just headed wide that you really would have thought he would put away. And it was great to see that. He made a great run on the play. But from a player who's playing on the left wing with a striker like Edinson Cavani, who needs service to be effective, you got to create more. And he wasn't creating anything. And it felt like United were short in attack there. Not to say that Mason Greenwood was any better on the other side, because he also was playing like Mason Greenwood, which was good, but not too creative, which really limited how effective Cavani could be. The crazy thing was, don't get me wrong, first 10 minutes of this game, and I said it at the bar, I said, watch, we'll probably concede in like 2 or 3 minutes, but this has been the best 10 minutes we've played in 2 months. And it was a very good first half compared, there's a big word there, compared to the previous games that we had been playing. Because when you rewatch that game, you're like, this is way better than what we've been seeing, but this is still not nearly good enough. Like they had all the ball, failed to create chances, gave up a couple of big chances the other way that Everton just didn't put away.
So I think the first thing that we'll touch on there with what you brought up, obviously this was an opportunity to kind of showcase and really get an idea of how Martial's looking. Of course, he does score that goal, which is important. But obviously a lot of deficiencies in that first half, as we saw too. Are you just chalking that up as rust, or playing from that left wing position, knowing the other personnel on the forward line? Was it a mistake to have a player like Martial also play in that position in that moment?
Yeah, I don't think it's a combination. I don't think it's rust. Martial's just not a left winger anymore. He bulked up to play in the middle, and then he got moved back out to the left wing. So he's slower than he used to be. And you know, he's more built to play in the middle, and that's what you want to see. He got on the end of the header right at the back post and he missed. It's great to see him make that run. Great to see him get on the end of the header. Unfortunately, he doesn't bury it, but nobody buries 10 out of 10 headers. All right. Not even Cristiano.
Certainly not Harry Maguire.
Yeah, certainly not Harry Maguire. And as we saw, like, Cavani got a really good header where he had time and the ability to put power behind the header and place his header, and it got saved. So, I mean, he hit the target, but it got saved. Martial's just not really a left winger, and a lot of this team didn't make sense. This team sort of felt like, okay, Solskjaer was like, I got to rotate a bit. I got to get Cavani a game. I want to get Martial a game. And I want to get so-and-so, you know, certain people rest. And this is what I'm going to come out with. But it never felt like it made sense given the players that you have on the pitch. Like, Martial has never really played well next to Cavani. And Cavani hasn't played well next to Martial, going back to last season, because he is a striker that needs that kind of service, and he's not. And Martial's success when he played on the left wing, which was really only when Romelu Lukaku was around, is because he's got a player that he could play off of and be the second forward. He didn't have success when Zlatan Ibrahimovic was here. He didn't have success when under that stretch under Ali, when Ali was the interim manager and Marcus Rashford was playing down the middle, and he hasn't had success with Cavani, and he hasn't really played with Ronaldo to say anything about that. But the two don't seem to stick together. And then Mason Greenwood on the other side has had some success with Cavani and sometimes not. It really depends on who else is on the pitch. And it's really just depends on the game, which you expect because he's 19 or he's 20 now. But he's still inconsistent because he's not quite there yet. But I like to see Mason Greenwood on the pitch without Ronaldo, because he's really struggled since Ronaldo's arrival. And I think that's partially because they're asking him to do different things and play a different role, kind of. And that doesn't really fit his skill. And it's good to let him get some time out there without Ronaldo. But he doesn't have that guy who's asking him to play off of him either. It just seemed like they were going with three forwards and not so much any creativity. And then you lacked all the creativity in your midfield too, with your Fred and Scott McTominay pivot, that one has to wonder. I tweeted before the game, like, this, I have so many thoughts about this starting 11, but it's so out there that maybe it just might work. And the first 10 minutes, it looked like that was going to be the case. And then Everton just settled into the game. And as they did that, United just got worse and worse.
Yeah. So once again, we trot out the McFred pivot. Bruno kind of at the top of the midfield. But as we've always said, you know, Bruno's playing kind of an amorphous position. He's just kind of all over the place.
Didn't make sense, because it was less 4-2-3-1. And much more 4-4-2. Like, Martial was dropping very deep, as was Greenwood, and they were very much in a line with McTominay and Fred. And Bruno was right up there with Cavani. And you bring in Cavani because you go, oh, he provides you with that energy and the defense and the pressing and the work rate. And Cavani and Bruno were doing that. But no one else was. So it was weird. And it's like, no one else was to a consistent point where it didn't look like they were told to, because say what you want about a lot of the players on the pitch, most of them, not all, but most, when coaches tell them to play a certain way, they do. Whether they do it well or not is a different story. But like, if the coaches were telling them to press, they would have pushed up. And there were times where they did in unison and it worked, and like it worked, but most of the game it was just Cavani and Bruno were pushing up to press and no one else followed them. And that's how Everton got their first chance, was Greenwood saw them go and thus creates a big gap between Cavani and Fred and your midfield. And Greenwood kind of pushed up too, except he didn't push up onto anybody. And Luca Digne, the left back, who is supposed to be Greenwood's man, was just behind him. So Greenwood's now out there just marking space on the right side. They play a long ball that Juan Bissaka has to now pick up the right back, which means Lindelof has to shift over. Lindelof loses the header, and all of a sudden, they're running at Rafael Varane untouched because Mason Greenwood had pushed up along with and not even the way that Cavani and Bruno did. He kind of just pushed up halfway into this no man's land at time. And like, it, these are the kind of individual mistakes that we see so often from certain players. And it's just mind boggling how many of United's issues come from one player makes kind of a bonehead decision or just goes where he's not supposed to go. And every player after that correctly rotates over to cover that gap. But eventually, as you keep creating another gap and filling that gap and then creating another one, eventually someone gets punished there.
All right. So you had said that the lineup prior to the game starting was almost so crazy it might just work. Looking at it, of course, almost just comparing the midfield pivots that we saw, you've got McTominay and Fred out, and then Everton trot out Allen and Decore. So, and as we see with the hindsight of what the possession numbers and everything looks like, Manchester United had the ball for three quarters of the match. Do you think just from the get-go it was a mistake to have the midfield the way it was set up, knowing that Everton was probably looking to just absorb and counter, especially when they're going to be playing at Old Trafford?
Especially when they're going to be playing at Old Trafford with Rafa Benitez as their manager. It's not like this is like a difficult way. You have to open up a massive textbook and go searching for all these permutations to figure out what Everton are going to do. Like, Rafa Benitez is a pretty straightforward open book here. So Doucouré and Allen, McTominay, Fred, you're getting energy and work rate and industry from both sides, which is nice, but it's also what United did. I don't know if we did a show after the Villarreal game. Did we?
No, we didn't, because I would have made a comment about how, we used the group stage to make it about ourselves by taking our shirt off after a goal celebration. I would have made that comment.
Well, now we use our shin pads.
Yeah, let us not forget.
So, in that game against Villarreal, we switched to a 4-3-3, which is what everybody had been asking for us to do for God only knows how long. And when everybody says, why don't we just play Bruno and Pogba with McTominay behind them? And Ollie put that out there and said, well, I'm going to show you why this doesn't work. And people were saying, oh, it didn't work because Bruno and Pogba were pushing up so high and you have to stay compact. Like, that's how Liverpool does it. And yet the thing is, there's more than one way to play a 4-3-3. The way Liverpool does it and the way Manchester City do it are two completely different ways. The way Jose Mourinho did it is different to both of those ways. And I wrote about this before the season. It really going with the different ways that they do it. Liverpool play with their fullbacks pushing up high and wide so that their forwards can be more interior and their midfielders stay tight and compact to account for the fact that the fullbacks are higher up. City play with the quote unquote free eights. So they let De Bruyne and whoever the other central midfielder is going to be, they let them push up, and Pep usually has his wingers staying high and wide. And to help out Fernandinho or Rodri, they have the fullbacks tuck inside and guard those those midfield areas. So United were doing that on Wednesday, and much more with the City model of having the fullbacks tuck inside. And, you know, Alex Telles is a guy who you want getting forward and whipping in crosses on the overlap. He wasn't getting forward. He was, you know, staying inverted. So was Diogo Dalot, who you were like, he's an attacking fullback. So it was like, obviously they didn't have a choice. And if you have Luke Shaw there, he's very good in that position. But Telles and Dalot were just atrocious in possession, as you would expect them to be, because they're not that good. Along with Scott McTominay, who's not that good in possession either. So that's why the midfield was a disaster against Villarreal. And it just looked like against Everton, they were building towards that again. They were having Wan-Bissaka and Shaw stay tucked inside so that, and Martial and Greenwood staying wide to provide the width, which, again, questionable because those guys are forwards. You want them closer to goal and to be able to score. And instead, you've got Shaw and Wan-Bissaka tugging inside, which allowed McTominay to like be able to make runs forward and like get into the box. And it's like, oh, so you're covering for a midfielder to get forward and you're giving that job to McTominay? Like, that is what you should do when Paul Pogba was playing in the pivot. Be like, hey, we're going to cover this space to allow you to get forward because that's where you're really useful. Whereas now we're like having Scott McTominay get runs and we're playing these passes to McTominay, who just doesn't have the technical ability in the box or near the box to really be creative and a force. And the amount of times he was tripping over his feet and just everything, again, not actively bad. It looked good. It was like, hey, I got a cross in that hit off this guy's shin and went out for a corner. So everybody cheers and claps. But it's like, if you had ability, like you'd be able to do something with that ball. Rather, at one point I said something in the bar to somebody because it was actually the right play. But I said, the only reason I'm comfortable there, like I was more comfortable there that it was McTominay running onto that ball because I knew he'd cross it first time because he can't think of anything else. Like Bruno Fernandes or Mason Greenwood might have stopped on that ball and tried to do something, which in that particular situation was the wrong thing to do. McTominay, just when he's making that run and getting to that ball, the only thing in his mind is, I just got to hit this first time back towards the middle. And in all the other times where he's on the ball, like it's just, you're not getting that technical ability near the box that you need. So it's like, why, if you were going to play tactically by telling your fullbacks, let's tuck inside and guard our midfield, like why'd you pick McTominay and Fred?
Well, in that instance, then, I mean, do you prefer then Pogba with a combo of Fred or McTominay in that situation, as it pertains to the Everton match, or are you still preferring to see Pogba kind of play in that left wing, left midfielder position?
Well, that's a good point. In that, if you're playing with Cavani, I'd like to see Pogba in that left midfielder position. Because that's where the two of them really clicked last year. That's when Cavani gives Pogba that space to tuck inside and operate, whereas Ronaldo keeps dropping into that space. And that's what was causing, that's what's broken up a bunch of things here, is Ronaldo drops into that space and it forces Sancho to stay wide and not come into the half space, which is where Sancho likes to be. It forces Pogba to move around the pitch, which creates gaps on your left side. Cavani is going to stay high and wide, and that's where Pogba played when they played against Tottenham and when they had the blowout against Roma. So in that regard, if you're going to play with Cavani, I'd rather Pogba be on that left side. Otherwise, I did think Pogba should have started in the pivot next to Matic, because at this point, like, Fred and McTominay have been getting carved open this season. And your best look so far, your two best defensive games. Funny how we say this now, because at the time it seemed like a disaster, but it has only gotten way worse. Your two best defensive games were Southampton, where you had Matic and Fred, and Newcastle, where you had Matic and Pogba. So at this point, like, go with Matic and Pogba against not the best teams in the league until they prove that you can't trust them.
Yeah, and obviously, like, having a guy like Matic in there too, just that veteran presence, knowing how much he can provide in front of the center backs, and just kind of that calmness of recycling the ball. We saw it against West Ham, where he was almost an instant impact sub late in the game, which is kind of bizarre to think about with Nemanja Matic, as we make the jokes about how he doesn't have his legs under him anymore or anything like that. But certainly when he has ample rest in between appearances, he seems to still be up for it. So I'll be curious to see.
He's been an impact sub now twice. Like, he was an impact sub against Villarreal because he came in and just sat in midfield and balanced it. And that allowed the attackers to go and attack. Like, that should be a warning sign here, because it's not like Fred and McTominay are playing significantly worse than they've ever played. They're playing like Fred and McTominay. Like, this is just who they are.
Right. It really does seem to me, especially with the Everton match, but it's been an issue that we've noticed a couple times now, where it just, there doesn't seem to be any kind of balance where you have kind of very hungry for service forwards like Martial, Cavani, and Greenwood. And then you have McTominay and Fred, who can't get the ball forward to them. So at what point do you start to shuffle and almost get out of your head too, like, guys that are considered undroppable at this point? Like, there just needs to be some more balance, certainly, from what I'm looking at.
Right. That's the biggest issue, is because it just seems like, who are you dropping? Solskjaer has been very reluctant to play Pogba in the pivot. I don't think he trusts him there. And for decent-ish reasons, he does hold on to the ball a bit too much, and teams are pressing him now because, frankly, if you have Fred or McTominay next to him, you can leave them open because they're not going to hurt you. He doesn't seem to trust Nemanja Matic anymore. He just doesn't really start him. And you leave him for the League Cup, and then, you know, what would you have lost? He was fresh for this match, but he doesn't play him. Donny van de Beek, you cannot trust there at all. He's just as bad defensively as Pogba, or McTominay has a propensity to lose his man and doesn't bring any of the attacking things that Paul Pogba does. So who are you dropping? I think it was telling that last week it was Fred, you know, it was McTominay who made way against Villa when they needed a goal, and then this week it was Fred who made way. Should he have taken off McTominay? Probably. It didn't really make sense. Fred was having a good game, but Fred was having a typical Fred game where he was doing a lot of good things, especially off the ball, and he made one mistake. And it was a glaring mistake, and it cost us a goal. And that's what everybody remembers. And I think this was like the Southampton match where Fred just kept giving the ball away over and over again because they were asking him to make more expansive passes that he couldn't make, that it looked really bad. So Ollie took him off. And then as soon as he came off, we had no midfield. And we got overrun and should have lost the game. If Fred plays an extra 10 minutes in that match, we probably win. I don't think this match, it was as bit, like, I wouldn't have said, oh, if we take McTominay off instead of Fred, we would win this match. But you bring on Paul Pogba, and Paul Pogba starts pushing higher up the pitch, and McTominay ends up as your deeper midfielder. Like, how's that going to help? You need somebody that could pass the ball up to them. Like, to bring on Pogba, who's going to now be raiding the box and everything, how does that help if you can't get the ball up there?
So we'll switch gears a little bit. Obviously we're talking about a draw, so we'll talk about Andrus Townsend is the reason for it being a draw, scored the equalizer for Everton. What'd you see on that play? What do you feel went wrong there? Because it seems, again, like United's having these little issues where they can't necessarily keep a clean sheet. And I know we spent all last year kind of enjoying a bend don't break defense, but it certainly seems, despite having a McTominay and a Fred, defensively, like, this team probably shouldn't have conceded a goal. So what did you see wrong that allowed Andrus Townsend to you know, get a point on the road for Everton.
I disagree with that. Defensively, they probably still should have conceded a goal. No pair of United's midfielders. Let's put it this way. United this season are averaging 9.29 successful box entries against. So whether it be a successful in open play, a successful cross, a pass into the box, or carrying it into the box, opponents get into United's box 9.3 times per game this year. Last year, that was 11.87. So that's better. Would you say? Would you not say so? I would say
numbers never lie.
Yeah, I would say that's better. So 9.29 is what United are averaging. Well, in the games that that we've gone with the McFred pivot, the number is 13. And
well, that's
normally
worse.
So think about that, because that 13 is also bringing that average up. Normally, when you bring that up, people will be like, well, they play the more difficult games and you got to fat. Yeah, like United are averaging 60% possession. They haven't played any of the top 16, any of the big six teams. They've literally been playing Leeds, Southampton, Wolves, Newcastle, West Ham, Aston Villa, Everton. Those are mid-table clubs, if not a little bit towards the bottom. And they're averaging 60% possession in the games that McTominay and Fred start. And yet, 13 box entries per game. Like, that's bad. So, yeah, like, I don't see them as the defensive pair anymore that maybe they once were. What happened on that goal? A lot happened. The blame goes to Fred. Everybody's throwing their blame onto Fred because he didn't win the tackle, and then Damari Gray shoved him off the ball later. But what happened previously to that was the man who scored the goal and the man who assisted on the goal were marking Victor Lindelof and Scott McTominay, respectively, in the box when that corner went in. And Everton just had a very controlled clearance. They didn't just try to head it away. They knew Damari Gray was on the edge of the box with no one there. And they just played it out to him and said, you're fast. Like, they actually didn't play it as far out wide as they wanted to. But he ran, got to the ball just before Fred. Fred was right on. It was like basically a 50-50 ball. So it went down towards the touchline. And he had the positioning on Fred and shouldered him off. United had more players behind the ball at the start of this corner than Everton did. And Damari Gray. And so after that, Damari Gray, Fred gets shoved off the ball. Juan Bissaka's there. Shaw comes too far over. And suddenly, one pass is able to bypass Shaw and Juan Bissaka. So now you've got Fred, Juan Bissaka, and Shaw out of the play. Everybody's trying to recover, and it's one more pass. NBC showed this, Skycam view of it, and it was really interesting to see how, when the ball got cleared, Everton's players started to, 70% jog, 30% run out, while United were, 60% walking, 40% jogging, and then only after, Fred loses that initial challenge does everybody start running back. Everton just wanted it more. United were lazy getting back, and despite having more people there, they got beat on this transition. And to put all the blame on Fred is extremely unfair. But he certainly should have fouled Damari Gray and just ended the play right there.
Yeah, rewatching the play right now too, as the ball is being passed to Andrus Townsend, who has no defenders in front of him, Rafael Varane is 5, maybe 6 paces behind him. And by the time Andrus Townsend rips off the shot, Varane is sort of closed in on him. So like you said, it really does feel like United just got caught sleeping in most of the regard, which is incredibly frustrating. Because it's one of those things where when you've got a 1-0 lead and you're at home, you should not be falling asleep.
I think that's fair. Yeah. And the warning signs were there too, because earlier in the game, Everton got a really good chance off of a United set piece, off of a United corner. And the warning sign was there too, because United played, I forget who it was. Let me see if I have it and I could pull it up here. I pulled so many things from this match. Like, I've, considering that I haven't written about this match, I'm still rewatching this match. I have like 5 minutes left. I have pulled more screen grabs from this match than in, so there is so much that like was just a failure. But yeah, oh, like basically what happened was is United did a short corner and Everton won, and Greenwood put the ball in the box. Everton won the initial header and it came out to the edge of the box, and Luke Shaw came running back in to head it back into the box, but his header just goes into a wall of Everton players, and Shaw's momentum takes him behind them. And suddenly Everton have like a 6-on-2 going the other way. And it just reminded me of, everybody remembers that scenario last season against Chelsea, where back when people still hated Luke Shaw and they were all getting on him because United took that corner and Bruno got the ball on the edge of the box and he was calling for Shaw to overlap and Shaw wouldn't overlap with him. And he wouldn't do that because he was one of three men back. And then a week and a half later, you go to Istanbul, Başakşehir, where Fernandez and Mata do a short corner routine. They call for an overlap. Juan Bissaka gives them that overlap, loses the ball, and now you only have one man back and United concede a goal. And it's like, when you have that, that was the whole issue, was if you devote an extra, if, like, you have three men back for a reason, and when you suddenly lose one, it's an issue. So Everton saw that there was an opportunity to hit United on counters from their own corners, and they exploited that.
Well, ultimately the game finished 1-1.
That was a very, like, I'm not listening to you sigh from you.
No, it's not that. It's just rewatching the play. It's frustrating. Cause it just seems like there's these little things that always seem to, you know, disrupt either good sections of play or whole results. For Manchester United, it really does just feel like there is just, I don't, you know, if it's something that's missing on the training ground, if it's just something that's missing in the players' heads, like once the game starts, it just, there's these little goofs that will occasionally happen, and it's not something that you're necessarily seeing from the clubs that United are trying to, you know, keep pace with right now. And whether or not that's personnel or that's coaching, I'm sure that's a debate that we don't necessarily need to get into right now, or even probably have the energy for, considering the way United Twitter's set up right now anyway, I'm sure.
Right. Either I mean, way, it's one of the big things that I came away with watching this match was just the lack of technical ability, and especially on the right side. We know Juan Bissaka's weak technically. Mason Greenwood has no fear of using his right foot to shoot or to cross, but other than that, doesn't really want to use it. He doesn't like to catch the ball and turn with it. If he's not facing goal, like he's a very play the way you're facing guy, as is Scott McTominay. So right there, that triangle of three down that right side, Juan Bissaka, McTominay, and Greenwood are so lacking in technical ability that it makes the right side just so weak to. But you also have a player in McTominay who won't take the ball on the half turn, and he's not good at picking out passes. 53% of McTominay's passes went to Greenwood or Juan Bissaka from a midfielder to really only, like, that's so bad to really only be seeing not just half the field, but the half that you're on. Remember, I don't know if we talked about it on this podcast or if someone else was telling me about it, but I feel like it was Colin that was telling me about it, that when Ryan Giggs late in his career moved into midfield. He was with the team eye doctor, and they discovered that his left eye was significantly weaker than his right eye. And it was like, yeah, because I don't need to see left. I'm on the left touchline. I just need to see to the right because that's where the whole field is. But now it's an issue because now I'm in the middle of the field and I need to be able to see in both directions. Like, if anything, I should be accusing McTominay of being like, you only pass left because you can't, you don't have that vision in your head. But he is the king of play the way you're facing. And he doesn't take up positions that help move the ball forward, that give the defense an option to give it to him. He's only looking right, like, which is a problem because he's, you're not going to feed Bruno Fernandes or Cavani or Ronaldo or whoever it is if you're only looking for these safe and simple passes to the right. And the amount of times that when United are building up that they just have, that they don't have an option in the middle and they just have to send it wide to the right, where Wan-Bissaka now doesn't have an option to go to the middle. He has, the only place he can go is up the right touchline. And Mason Greenwood is going to catch that ball with his back to goal. One or two touches later, he's passing it back to Wan-Bissaka because they don't have anybody that can turn on the ball. And that was the thing that Jadon Sancho offered them. And when he came on, was all of a sudden he started taking defenders on, and that got people moving. There's a sequence when it's 1-1 where United get the ball on a throw-in and Shaw gives it to Sancho, or I think Sancho gets it off the throw-in, and no one is moving, which is a staple of United, is nobody's making runs, nobody's moving. Sancho's got nowhere to go. Bruno and Pogba both lift up their hands and say, go back, like, go to Varane. And instead, Sancho just takes on the defender. And as soon as he does that, Bruno makes a run because he gets by the defender and people have to start moving, and he plays Bruno in. Like, it's just that simple. If you start trying things, you get people moving around. And that whole right side, like, they lack that technical ability to play with both their feet consistently and confidently. And Greenwood is 20, so he's still developing that, or there's still hope for him. Wan-Bissaka is 22, 23, so, like, the clock's ticking. If he doesn't have it by the end of this season, he ain't getting it. McTominay's going to be 25 in 2 months. It's not coming for him. People are going to if people don't like the manager, they will say, well, isn't that coaching? Managers at professional football clubs are not going to make you a better technical player. They're not going to improve your first touch and all that stuff. That's not what they do. That's something that you develop.
Certainly not when McTominay was in his developmental phase, Mourinho was the coach, and Mourinho didn't give a damn about the academy.
Right. But those are, and to be fair to McTominay, he was hurt. He got hurt during, like, his 17, 18 year old seasons, and he missed a lot of time. So he was behind in those players. But that's the age where you develop these technical skills, and you don't get that time back. Like, that's the thing is, you don't like, those skills don't get developed later. And coaches, even the best coaches don't develop them. Like, if you look at Pep buys players that are technically that have very good technical skills. That's what he looks for. Oh, I need a left back. Like, I signed Fabian Delph. I'm going to stick him at left back. Alexander Zinchenko is like, is he a left back? Is he a midfielder? He plays one for club, one for car, like, because he's a technically very good footballer. John Stones, he signed him because he's very technical. Can't really defend, but that wasn't the Pep's like, you could teach defending and you could teach positioning. You don't, by the time you're in your 20s and you've hit the professional level, you do not teach technical skills anymore because you either have them or you don't. And that is the problem, is United don't have them. And just to, that I'm not, I actually asked the coach about this today to say, like, how much is a professional coach going to work on your technical skills? And he said, they don't. At that point, it's up to the player to work hard. And if he says to the coach, I want to work on X, then the coaches will devise sessions for him to do. But that's not going to happen during training. That's going to happen, he's got to put in extra work after that. Professional coaches are not dealing with that. That's what you develop as a child or in the youth ranks. And United, just, like, they're lacking it in so many areas.
We should play Sancho more.
No, we should. We should play Sancho more.
not to completely rehash any of our last podcasts, but you remember how we spent like 2 years going, man, when are we going to sign Jadon Sancho? And then we got him.
And we just won't use him.
It's like we got the Christmas present, and it's 2 weeks after Christmas, and we're already like not playing with it, or, you know, like just in general, the birthday gift, maybe that would be more applicable for everybody.
Or like maybe we got the first generation, like the first release of like the PlayStation, so it's the one with all the bugs.
Yeah. But it doesn't seem like he has any bugs. He just needs to be like bled into the team. And instead we got our shiny toy, and then we went and bought a hand-me-down thing from the Goodwill that appeared to be good back in the day. And
no, it was definitely good back in the day.
Definitely good back in the day.
Part of the issue is, I get like not benching Greenwood in those first few games because he had scored 3-3. And if you drop him, even after Ronaldo comes, if you drop him, the fans would be revolting. But he hasn't scored a goal in 5 games now. He hasn't scored since Ronaldo arrived. And the only time he looked really good this month was in his cameo against West Ham in the League Cup when Ronaldo wasn't on the pitch. So like maybe we should try being like, hey, Mason Greenwood doesn't need to play every game. We should try Jadon Sancho here, especially when we have the big center forward that is, give me the ball, provide me service, and I will score. But that's my big attribute. Cavani does the defensive things also, but in possession, that's his attribute. That's what he brings to the team. And if you're not giving him the ball, then like why, you know, might as well start Martial up top.
So speaking of other forwards, we're obviously recording this on Tuesday, October 5th. There was a report that Marcus Rashford might be ready, and he will be playing in a closed-door match on Wednesday the 6th. What do you anticipate as he gets, you know, brought back into the squad? Because it seems like at this point, everybody has to be able to work with or around Ronaldo. Like, that is Manchester United's offense. So what do you anticipate adding the Rashford element to that as he has to learn to combine with Ronaldo?
I don't know. I don't know what to expect because, well, for a few reasons. One is, like, again, just like Martial, we have seen him play with Zlatan Ibrahimovic and it wasn't good. And Rashford next to Cavani hasn't been that great either on the left side. On the right side, he has played as a more creative forward, and it's been very good. He's assisted on a bunch of Cavani chances. He drives to the net. He's looked good. Are you going to play like Sancho on the left and Rashford on the right? That wouldn't make a ton of, I mean, it would in theory make some sense, but Sancho also was getting jettisoned out wide on the left and with Ronaldo. It's complicated. At the same time though, like these are the games. Rashford should have been added firepower, and now he's like, oh, the savior is coming. And he shouldn't be looked at as the savior, but now he is because we are struggling so much.
This is how he breaks his back again, having that mentality coming with him.
But these are the games for him to play against the Cities and the Liverpools, etc., because there will be room to run in behind. The question is your center forward going to facilitate a player running in behind like that? Lukaku does. Anthony Martial, when he plays centrally, does, which is why Rashford has been so good on the counter in these games when Martial is playing, and was really not so great at Anfield last year, where Martial was on the left wing and not central, or against City at home last season when he played next to Greenwood rather than Martial. Martial really helps create that space for Rashford to run in behind on. I don't know if Ronaldo will. So, yeah, these are the games that are good for Rashford. But it remains to be a question to see how he's going to gel with this team.
I think lastly, because we've got the international break coming up, so not really a whole lot else that we really want to talk about since we haven't even brushed up on the U.S. men's national team yet. Things that we were worried about with a certain player signing, we're seeing a greater sample size. I think that certainly the worry has not gone away. There's been a lot of papering over the cracks, but over the course of a 38-game Premier League season, add all the extra games that you play in all the cup competitions, well, one less cup, obviously, with the Carabao Cup now not being a possibility. Is United's best hope right now, as we look at it, having Ali creating the courage to use Ronaldo as a super sub? Because we saw Sir Alex Ferguson say today that United would have won if they started Ronaldo against Everton. But as we saw against earlier in the week, like, Ronaldo can't play 90 minutes day in, day out, especially when we're doing midweek and weekend games all in the same week.
You can come at me if you want, but what Sir Alex Ferguson said is the worst thing Sir Alex Ferguson has done for this club in a long time, because it just makes Ollie's job much more difficult when he's already like people are, I mean, no one will be suggesting Sir Alex Ferguson is calling the shots anymore, because there are people that are like, oh, Ollie's just a puppet for Ferguson so that he doesn't have to have the limelight. Sir Alex Ferguson was the king of rotating his squad and tinkering with his squad. And Cristiano Ronaldo has not played more than, has only played 30 games in a season, like once in the last 5 years. And that came when Juventus went home early in the Champions League. Or, yeah, all right. If we look, going back to when he turned 31, the games he played, the equivalent in minutes, he played 28.2, 25.4, 29.9, 32.4, 31.1. And those last two were at Juventus when they went home early in the Champions League so he could play more league games, because they lost in the round of 16. He cannot play every game. So, like, yeah, resting him was the right move. I spoke about this with someone this morning. Like, one of the things that I've seen, or if you look at Ronaldo's usage at Real Madrid, how basically the team was kind of built around him, as you would expect. When Jose Mourinho got there, like, Ronaldo either scored or assisted on 51.96% of Real Madrid's goals in La Liga. And his numbers hovered around there. And he scored 40% of their goals, and then the next year he scored 38%. Next year, 33%. So he had a down year under Mourinho. And then Ancelotti got there, and he scored 29%. But then the next year, 40, it's back up to 40, and they're losing again. And it was only under Zidane where those numbers dropped down to like 25%. But in the Champions League, it rose to like 55%. And that was really what Zidane did, was basically be like, look, in the league, we're not building around you. You're going to be one of the team. And in the Champions League, we are going to get compact. We're not going to concede goals, and we are going to focus everything on you, and you are going to win us Champions Leagues. And they scored fewer goals, but they relied on Ronaldo to get them in. And that's probably what Ali has to do, and be like, look, we have to play a certain way. Now, in Europe, the way that we're playing in the league is not going to work, and we're going to get more defensively, and we're going to hunker down, but we've got you. So we're going to get more industry on the pitch. Maybe that's when you bring in, I mean, that's when you would bring in a Daniel James. So maybe now you bring in Jesse Lingard instead of like a Pogba or someone else, and be like, we're going to get more industry in here, and they're going to feed the ball to you. And we're going to win these games. We're going to grind out 1-0s, and you're going to carry us through that. It's just hard to see how it all clicks right now. I'm more optimistic now than I was maybe this morning, because I spoke to somebody else about this today and like talked ourselves into it. Like, we brought in a guy who doesn't fit the side, the way the side's currently built. And so obviously there's going to be things were going to fall off a bit, because we just threw him in. We didn't have time to integrate him. And it's not surprising that things became dysfunctional. It's going to take a little bit of time to click. And now you've got 2 weeks for the coaches to go back and be like, okay, let's review this. What's happening? Why isn't it working? What do we need to do? What do we need to change? And hopefully be able to put those changes in. Like, when we signed Ronaldo, I had concerns. How will this, you know, I said it's going to start great, but how will it look in January and February when the weather gets cold and he's played a lot of games? I didn't expect for the wheels to fall apart within 2 weeks, but maybe it's better that it fell apart within 2 weeks so that we can look and see, okay, why isn't it working? What do we have to do to make it work?
Well, in the last order of business, then I guess we'll bring up, as you said, that the coaching staff now has 2 weeks to take a look at things. Of course, Mike Phelan just signed a contract extension, so he will be around to look at said things. How are you feeling about all these coaching contract extensions right now?
I don't like it, but it's a statement from the club. Something needs to change. Something needs to change. I don't think it's unfair to say something needs to change. Managers have shaken up their backroom staff plenty of times before. I don't like the fact that it's a statement from the club that we're doubling down, that Ollie's our guy, that we have faith in this coaching staff. And that's fine. If the club wants to make that statement, I add another coach then. Like, just add someone more senior, because nobody really knows what Mike Phelan does. And
vibes guy.
Right. But like, when Phelan was Fergie's right hand man, United didn't play their best football then either. Like, they weren't a great side. Those were not some of Ferguson's best teams. So, like, you know, at a certain point, knowing the club and knowing how things work around there is not enough to be a coach, because you have enough coaches that know the club and know how things work. And you hire a new coach and he walks in on day one and the other coaches and the manager are going to tell him, this is how we're doing things around here.
You know, if Colin was on the podcast, he'd say that he knows of a coach that knows United that is embattled right now and probably needs a change of scenery.
Yeah, he would.
And his son recently scored 4 goals against Liverpool in the youth academy game.
His son's like tearing it up. It's like kind of funny. He had like a hat trick against Stoke. But yeah, I think he's pretty determined to. First of all, that's just the most nostalgia trip ever. If you go and hire Wayne Rooney after bringing in Ronaldo and you already have Carrick on your team, like, what are you selling fans other than, hey, it's 2008 all over again?
Well, as we know in our group chat, I already have a meme built out for that one. So we're ready to go. It's a Rick and Morty reference. If anybody can figure that one out, it'll be funny when it finally debuts on the Busby Babe Twitter account. But, I mean, at this point, we're talking about Mike Phelan's contract extension, so I think it's probably about time to wrap up the pod. Obviously, international break coming up. Everybody just cross your fingers. Hope nobody gets injured. And also that Marcus Rashford just absolutely murders it in a closed-door game and comes back really good, and that'll be nice. Closing thoughts, Paulie.
I'm hungry. Hungry for trophies, and I'm hungry for those mashed potatoes.
Yeah, we did start the podcast talking about mashed potatoes, so I'm gonna let you go do that. I'm gonna start looking for my own food situation as well. Obviously, none of us are gonna eat dessert because Ronaldo's on the team and we're scared of him, and he doesn't eat dessert, so we'll just eat our entrees only. But for Paulie Kwesel, I'm Nathan Heinchel. We are looking forward to reuniting the Busby Bays soon again to get our boy Colin Dams back on here, so that way he can probably keep this thing from going off the rails a little bit better. And then we can talk about the men's national team. So until next time, everybody. Paulie, that's when you're supposed to say off eater saying.
I know, but I was just gonna leave it.
Colin, keep this in.